We hear the term a lot, worldview. What in the world is a worldview? This seems such a big topic. It encompasses, well, how you think and what you do. We're going to discuss worldviews here in the first part of Issues Etc. Here in the first half hour, Pastor David Thompson will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome to the program. At the bottom of the hour, Congressman Jerry Costello will join us here on Issues Etc. to talk about being a pro-life Democrat, the Democratic Party, and the issue of abortion. He's from the 12th Congressional District in Illinois. And then in the second hour of the program, a regular guest, Dr. Stephen Hine, joins us to discuss the Trinity. This last Sunday was Trinity Sunday. And here on this Wednesday, we're going to be discussing the doctrine of the Trinity. Then in the third hour of the program, Dr. Thomas Madden, maybe you've seen the movie, you've certainly heard about the movie Kingdom of Heaven, about the Crusades. Dr. Thomas Madden of St. Louis University will join us. He has written a book called The New Concise History of the Crusades. He'll set the record straight if it needs to be set straight. And then in the last half hour of the program, Pastor Joel Brondos, he joined us last week, I believe, to talk about classical Christian education. Today he joins us in the last half hour to talk about making the transition from what you're doing now in a school, in the classroom, to classical education. He is headmaster of Zion Lutheran Academy in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Here in the first part of the program, Pastor David Thompson is our guest. He joins us to talk about worldviews. Pastor Thompson is executive director and chaplain for the Marvin M. Schwann Retreat and Conference Center in Trago, Wisconsin. The Schwann Center is going to be hosting this Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar this summer, June the 26th through July the 1st. Pastor Thompson, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much, Todd.
What is a worldview?
Well, I would say that a worldview is very closely related to the term philosophy or even religion. And in fact, I would compare a worldview to like putting on a pair of glasses. And when you put on different glasses of different strengths, you get a different view of the world each time you put them on. And so it determines how one thinks about various aspects, in fact, all of life. Everything from nature to the moral issues to the supernatural, whether truth can be known or not, who Jesus Christ is or was, and so forth. So worldview just covers about everything there is.
All right. What distinguishes a Christian worldview, a biblical worldview, from all other worldviews that may exist?
Well, Scripture does. When a Christian puts on scriptural worldview glasses, he sees the world in a particular way, in a particular light. And if a person puts on worldview glasses of Islam, for example, he sees the world quite differently. Or if he puts on worldview glasses from pantheism or Darwinism or Catholicism or evangelicalism, which of course are closely related to us in some aspects, or pantheism and so forth, there are different views on different topics depending which worldview glasses you're putting on. But again, the Christian worldview is based on Scripture. And here at the Schwann Center for our Confessional Worldview Seminar, we're obviously coming from a confessional Lutheran perspective, and so which we believe is the biblical perspective as well.
Is part of the problem, David, that Christians, while they think of themselves as Christians, and certainly do believe what Christians believe, very often do not think in a Christ-centered, cross-focused way. They have adopted to one degree or another some worldview, in part, opposed to what the Bible says in its Christ-centered, cross-focused message.
Exactly, and the problem is they don't even know the particular worldview they may be adopting or the part of the worldview they may be adopting that is contrary to the Christian worldview. And these worldviews, you know, first of all, they're always, the false worldviews are always deceptive because they sound good, they sound beneficial, they sound even necessary, and they may even promote many things that are legitimate that we as Christians would agree with, but there's always some element of deception to them, which makes them very dangerous. And second of all, I would say that even if a false worldview does not directly undermine one of the essential teachings of Christian salvation and the cross of Christ, they always contradict at least some biblical truth or fact. The bottom line is that the inspiration and inerrancy of the Bible is undermined, and the foundation has been laid through these false worldviews to doubt or deny other truths of Scripture, including that the central, all-pervasive biblical teaching of salvation by grace for Christ's sake through faith. In other words, adopting a false worldview can easily become a slippery slope.
So what worldview that is out there in the atmosphere now is the biggest threat to Christianity, in your opinion?
That's a hard one. And you ask different people that question, you'd get different answers. But I would say one of the main ones that's out there, no matter where you turn these days, is what's called postmodernism. And we're going to have a couple speakers at our worldview seminar speaking to that one in particular. But postmodernism basically says that all truth is constructed by each culture or each individual. And one of the most important ethical teachings of postmodernism is the teaching on multiculturalism or tolerance. And by tolerance, we simply don't mean putting up with that which is false, but postmodernists define tolerance as respecting every other person's views, lifestyles, religion, and so forth. And it's very, very prominent today. You find it in the public schools. You find it on TV. You find it just about everywhere.
Let's talk about this Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar this summer at the Schwann Center there in Trago. You'll have, among the other guests, three regular guests here on Issues, Etc. speaking at this conference. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will be speaking, Dr. Jean Aberveith, and Dr. Angus Manouge. Give us a rundown about what they'll be discussing and what participants in the conference will be hearing.
Well, Jean Aberveith has a very interesting subject. His presentation is titled The New Polytheism. And that may be a shock to us to think that polytheism is alive and well in our culture, but he will be arguing that religious relativism, which is very prominent, has taken the next step toward polytheism. And so he'll be discussing that with us, and the sin of syncretism that we find not only today, but which was very prominent, obviously, in the Old Testament and led to the downfall of God's people. We have, as you mentioned, Angus Manouge. He has a talk entitled The Purpose of Science, a Sacred Cow, or Sacred Calling. And he'll be talking about modern science, how it actually arose due to the Reformation, but how it is in fact in danger today. And he'll be looking at the historical, philosophical, theological basis for the vocation of scientist and help us understand better how being a scientist is in fact a vocation that is very pleasing to God, as long as it is based on truth coming from God's word, truth coming from natural law. Alvin Schmidt, we haven't had him here before, but we're excited to have him here because he'll be speaking on two subjects. He'll be speaking on Islam, the unrecognized threat to Christianity in the West, and the other topic of his will be how Christianity changed the world, based on one of his books that he wrote several years ago and also revised recently.
So what makes this conference unique?
Well, I think what makes it so unique, Todd, is the fact that we have these experts who are all confessional Lutherans who are coming here, who understand very well the specific worldview they're going to be speaking to. And there's a number of worldview seminars out there today. The vast majority of them are sponsored by the evangelicals, and we have to commend them for the job they're doing, but to be honest, they are off base in their theology, which then makes them somewhat off base in how they explain what's wrong with particular worldviews.
And let's get to some nuts and bolts then. What are the accommodations for the participants in this worldview conference, like at the Trago location?
The Schwann Center is located about 2 hours from the Twin Cities in Minnesota. We're in northwestern Wisconsin. And we have 700 acres, beautiful acres of woods, forests, trails, lakes, river. And we have actually three different places where people can stay during the seminar. They can stay in our cottages. We have hotel units, very nice hotels. And we also have duplexes, which are like large cabins, very nice facilities. They're all about 5 years old, so they're beautiful facilities. And we have wonderful meeting rooms, great accommodations. We have super food. Todd, you were here, and you were able to eat some of our food. I'm sure you remember how good it was.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah. And so if people are interested in coming to the Worldview Seminar, they can come for a day, they can come for the whole week. It's from June 26th through July 2nd. It begins on a Sunday evening where we have a social time and meet with the presenters, and then right away Monday morning we begin with our first talk, which is the Confessional Christian Worldview Standard. And
the cost is flexible depending on how long one stays at the conference?
Right. The cost is, if they come for the whole week, it's as low as $329, and that includes all meals, all presentations, all lodging. And if they come for just a one-night stay, for example, they can pay as little as $90. And that would include two meals, the lodging, and the presentations for the day.
And then time for relaxation. When I was there twice, once as we were broadcasting there, once as a speaker at the Worldview Conference, there's a lot of things to do just there in that 700 acres.
Right. We have one of the best little fishing lakes in the state of Wisconsin. And we also have a beach. We have canoes. We have rowboats. We have about 15 miles of trails. We have sand volleyball, tennis courts, basketball courts, horseshoes, and all kinds of places to relax and read and enjoy good conversation and with people who are like-minded.
Folks, for more information on a Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar held this summer from June the 26th through July the 2nd at the Schwann Center in Trago, Wisconsin, call the Schwann Center. They'll send you a free brochure, 1-800-577-4848. 1-800-577-4848, or go to our website, issuesetc.org. Look for the Schwann Center logo. Click there, and there'll be some contact information. Their number again, 1-800-577-4848. Stay the whole week, stay a couple days, stay one day, and hear some great seminars on a confessional Christian worldview. Pastor David Thompson, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you so much, Todd.
That's Pastor David Thompson, Executive Director and Chaplain for the Marvin M. Schwann and Retreat Center in Trago, Wisconsin. Again, the Schwann Center is going to be hosting that Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar this summer, June the 26th through July the 22nd, up in Trago, Wisconsin. Now, coming up in just a minute here, we're going to have a conversation with Congressman Todd Akin. Yesterday, the House voted, and they passed H.R. 810. Now, H.R. 810 was a contentious bill. It has to do with embryonic stem cell research. It has to do with how many embryos are available with federal funding, and that's going to be an issue we want to take up with Congressman Todd Akin here in just a few minutes on the program. We're going to break up that interview there over the break, and then at about 20 till, we're going to have an interview with Dr. Robert George of the President's Council on Bioethics on yesterday's House vote on H.R. 810 and the prospects for embryonic stem cell research in the future. The big question here being the federal funding. Now, in the second hour of the program, Dr. Stephen Hine will be our guest. We'll talk about the doctrine of the Trinity. He's director of the Concordia Institute for Christian Studies. Very important one-hour conversation there in the second hour for you to take note of. And then Dr. Thomas Madden of St. Louis University joins us. The new movie, Kingdom of Heaven, is out. It's all about the Crusades. Does this movie repeat some of the inaccuracies about the Crusades? Does it accurately portray what the Crusades were all about? Now, granted, fiction, but it's historical fiction, so how historical is this piece of fiction, Kingdom of Heaven? And then in the last half hour, Pastor Joel Brandos will be our guest. We'll talk about making the transition from regular old education to a classical model of education in the last 25 minutes of Issues, etc. Congressman Todd Akin is of the 12th Congressional District in Missouri, and he's a member of the House Science Committee as well as the Subcommittee for Research. And he's authored a commentary on stem cell research in yesterday's St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I had a conversation with him earlier today. Here's how it began. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're joined here for the next few minutes to talk with Representative Todd Akin of the 12th Congressional District in Missouri. He has authored a commentary on embryonic stem cell research yesterday in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, side by side by a fellow House Science Committee member and Research Subcommittee member, Representative Russ Carnahan. They've taken two different sides of the issue. We're talking with Representative Todd Akin. Congressman, welcome to Issues, Etc.
It's a pleasure to join you and your audience.
Well, yesterday H.R. 810 did pass. Tell us about the bill.
Well, the bill was one that was supported mostly by the pro-abortion groups that wanted to see us getting into putting federal money into funding research which results in the destruction of embryos. And it had most of the Democrats voted for it. I think maybe 12 Democrats voted against it. And then the great majority of Republicans voted against it, but we did lose all of our pro-abortion and a few pro-life Republicans. So it passed. There were about 200 and something votes for it. We had 194 votes against it. But clearly plenty of votes to sustain the president's veto.
So the president has promised to sustain a threat of a veto on this bill. Do you concur with his reasoning that this would, as he said, I think either late yesterday or earlier today, threaten human life?
Well, it certainly does. This whole issue has been one where people have been somewhat confused on it, and to some degree that's been assisted by those who are inventing scientific terms to try to keep people confused. The way to understand it is to realize there is a whole area called stem cell research. Now, of that stem cell research, there are essentially two kinds. One is what's known as adult stem cell, and the other is embryonic. The adult stem cell research has produced at least something in the nature of 58 almost miraculous cures or improvements to some very difficult diseases. The embryonic stem cell has so far succeeded in producing tumors and cancer in rats. The bill that we passed yesterday that was very contentious, at least it was very heavily debated, what it would allow us to do is to destroy human embryos. And many of us who are of the pro-life persuasion made the point on the floor, and as I did, that every one of us was an embryo. An embryo is a stage in human development. All of us were embryos at one time. And so if you start to experiment on and to destroy embryos and you agree to that premise, then that only simply leads to the question is, well, how long will you grow the embryos before you decide to harvest parts and things like that? So there were a number of reasons why we opposed this legislation. The first was the destruction of embryos, that is, human beings. The second was the use of public money to do that, because there are many taxpayers who are strongly pro-life and see this as an abhorrent practice. Why should they be compelled to pay their taxes to support something which they consider to be the destruction of our most fundamental right, the right that's mentioned in our Declaration of Independence, the right to life? And then lastly, it's a lousy use of money because of the fact that we're getting very good results in adult stem cell research, and this embryonic has proved to be a very poor investment. So if we're supposed to be stewards of taxpayers' dollars, wouldn't we want to put the money into the adult where there are all of these great cures that are coming along? So a number of reasons why we voted no.
Congressman, on that fiscal issue, is it telling that private capital, private business, private money has not flocked to embryonic stem cell research?
Well, certainly it is, and that's, of course, they want to take government money to fund something. And then if we come up with something, maybe they'll jump into it. But it has not proved to be a promising area, and so they're wanting more federal money dumped into that. And you're right, the private money is more likely to want to go to things that are working. But also there is this very big ethical question about, really, are we going to get into this area of destroying embryos? Are we going to get into cloning? How far do you want to grow somebody for body parts before you kill them? Once you take an embryo, by definition, an embryo contains all of the unique information which defines a human being. And the only thing that you add to an embryo is climate control and food and some time to grow, and it becomes a person. You see, it becomes a regular adult. That's all that you're adding. So everything that defines a person is contained in that embryo, all the information. And so the question is, you know, do we really want to get into this business of destroying a person? And that leads to the simple a simple explanation of where many of us were in this vote, and that is we believe in stem cell research as long as you don't kill the donor.
One of the things that concerned me was the issue of in vitro fertilization. Not so much that issue in particular, but the language that seemed to grow up in favor of H.R. 810 around it, and that is the embryos were in question were referred to as sometimes even unwanted byproducts of in vitro fertilization, and I find that somewhat disturbing.
Well, when somebody paid more than $1,000 for one, you kind of wonder about how unwanted they are.
Well, and not to mention the fact that there are certainly many married couples who would jump at the opportunity
to adopt,
to adopt and undergo the same kind of in vitro fertilization with embryos that are already frozen and, in the terms of the proponents of this bill, unwanted.
In fact, a number of children that were born under those conditions visited the president and the House yesterday. They were called snowflake children, and they had come from those very embryos.
You mentioned that some pro-life Republicans voted for H.R. 810. What was the reason?
A fairly small number, actually, but some did. I'm guessing somewhere in the neighborhood of about 10 or so that otherwise had good pro-life voting records switched over on that vote.
Side by side with your commentary in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch yesterday on the political debate over stem cell research sits your colleague, Russ Carnahan's commentary. He serves along with you on the House Science Committee and on its research subcommittee. He had several things to say. I'd like your reaction. First of all, he said that time is being wasted. While they delay, he says, lives are being lost. We cannot lose time, as he says, bickering over partisanship and politics. How do you respond?
Well, first of all, to say it's partisanship and politics to defend an embryo, which is a human at some particular stage of development, certainly is, I think that's very much an incorrect statement. You know, this is something that, this is what, it is our job as legislators is to look at these very important ethical questions. To say that's just partisanship, it is true that the great number of Democrats are very comfortable with abortion and very comfortable with this particular bill, but certainly there is a public policy question about the destruction of embryos.
Now we're going to pick up the rest of our conversation with Congressman Aiken here on the other side of the break. He is of the 12th Congressional District in Missouri, a member of the House Science Committee and the Subcommittee on Research, and he's authored that commentary on stem cell research in yesterday's St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He'll respond to some of the other things that Representative Carnahan had to say in his side of that commentary. And when we come back from the break, as we conclude that conversation, we'll also be talking with someone from the President's Bioethics Council on the same piece of legislation and its prospects, H.R. 810. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc. Later on in the program, the Doctrine of the Trinity will be our second hour of conversation with Dr. Stephen Hine, and then we'll spend the last hour talking about the movie Kingdom of Heaven with Dr. Thomas Madden of St. Louis University and making the transition from education, an educational system which no one is really happy with nowadays, to a classical model of education. We'll be right back after this with the rest of our conversation with Congressman Todd Aiken.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Fire is a designation for doctrine, and staff is a designation for practice.
Pastor Clement Preuss on the title and content of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, The Fire and the Staff, Lutheran Theology in Practice.
Fire means the doctrine of Christ and the doctrine of forgiveness of sins in Christ is like a fire. It shines and it heats us and guides our way. And then a staff is what a shepherd would use to prod his sheep in the right direction. And so fire is a designation for doctrine and staff is a designation for practice. And the book examines the relationship between doctrine and practice, hence the title, The Fire and the Staff.
Order The Fire and the Staff by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or go to our website, issuesetc.org. There on the homepage, you'll find the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, The Fire and the Staff, issuesetc.org. Giving missionaries a voice through use of a small satellite is one way God is using technology to spread His word. This Global Minute shares encouraging information about partnerships in spreading the gospel. Christ's body is made up of people who have different gifts and abilities. Christian-run organizations can complement each other too. Mission Aviation Fellowship uses technology to benefit missionaries and Christian leaders in other countries. MAF is known for serving others through airplanes, but now they're implementing VSAT systems to help others with internet connections, distance education, and telemedicine. This service allows Christians who have skills in medical health, education, and relief work to share Christ's love. Pray more Christians with strong technical skills will joyfully give themselves in service to others. Take your first step into a world of mission opportunities. Visit the website missionvisionnetwork.org. That's missionvisionnetwork.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Genesis chapter 1 tells us God created the world in 6 days. Then chapter 2. By the seventh day, God had finished the work He had been doing, so on the seventh day He rested from all His work. Why did God rest? God certainly doesn't get tired, as Isaiah 40:28 tells us. God rested to admire His creation. Of the previous days, the Bible says, God saw what He had made, and it was good. So we infer that God admired His creation on that day of rest. And since you and I are part of God's creation, God's rest shows He's interested in us. By resting, God identified Himself with our human patterns of work and rest. He's with us these days as we are working and looking forward to a long weekend of rest. The deepest purpose of God's rest is to teach us, in our own times of rest, to look to Emmanuel, His Son, God with us, Matthew 1:23. Jesus says, "Come to Me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." The coming weekend is about remembering our fallen patriots, and that we will do. But as you plan for these next days, remember that God Himself rested, and now He wants to get close to you, and He wants to draw you into His rest.
Would you like to support AM850 KFUO and at the same time let others learn about your church? Well, why not become an AM850 KFUO Church of the Week sponsor? Your congregation will be mentioned in every hourly station identification, and during the week there will be 35 announcements giving your church's address and phone number. Plus, Paul Clayton will interview your pastor on the morning show. To become a Church of the Week sponsor, please contact Jeff Craigmeyer at 314-725-3030.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're right in the middle of our conversation I had earlier with Congressman Todd Akin of the 12th Congressional District in Missouri. He's a member of the House Science Committee, and more importantly, he's a member of the Subcommittee on Research, and that is the committee that is looking very intensely and was looking intensely at H.R. 810 that would give federal money for more research on more human embryos from in vitro fertilization for embryonic stem cell research. He's authored a commentary on stem cell research in yesterday's St. Louis Post-Dispatch along to the other side of U.S. Representative Russ Carnahan. Now, before the break, he had responded to one thing that Congressman Carnahan had to say. Next, I asked him to respond to this. Carnahan writes, "We must ease these crippling restrictions on research and set reasonable ethical standards to move this medical research forward." I asked Congressman Akin, is there an ethical way to do embryonic stem cell research?
Well, if you think it's ethical to destroy humans in one state of their development, that is, when they're embryos, if you're comfortable with doing that, and if you feel that it's okay to call that ethical, I suppose that's why they would vote that way. But certainly, many people do not think that's ethical. Don't think it's a good idea to destroy people, even though it is a very early part of our development. And I don't think there's an ethical way to do that. And what's more, part of that line of reasoning is not true. There are lines of embryos that are available, but there has not been much demand on it. And as I said before, the reason that there is not much demand is because of the fact it doesn't work. All it's done is produce tumors and cancers in rats, Whereas the adult stem cell lines, where there's plenty of those available, particularly the umbilical or cord blood, those lines of research have been very promising and have produced things where people that were blind and they can partly see after getting an injection of some stem cells, people that could not walk that are able to walk with a walker. I mean, we're talking about some very significant medical breakthroughs in the adult stem cell line area, and that's where a lot of people are parking their money. So, you know, to some degree, if you've got private money, you have an incentive to park the money where it's going to do you some good.
Two final questions, Congressman. We've had as a regular guest on this program for some years now Wesley Smith of the Discovery Institute, who has written extensively in National Review Online and townhall.com and elsewhere against human cloning and embryonic stem cell research. He says that the reason there is such a rush to federal money is not only because private money doesn't want to get behind what they see as an unprofitable effort, but also because government money is seen as the best source for embryonic stem cell research and the attendant human cloning issue to eventually result in patents on human tissue, human cells, perhaps even human body parts. And he says it's about the money in that case.
That is something that I have suspected all the way along and have been asking some penetrating questions to various witnesses to try to find that out. And along those lines, I suspect that what he is saying is true. I have several reasons to suspect that. First of all, I was talking to one of our members yesterday and had asked him about the very question, and he got a list of who the money was that was supporting this bill. And the Democrats, some of them had a list of who had made contributions to try to push this legislation forward, and apparently that list of contributions included a number of drug companies. I've not seen the list. I can't prove it. All I can say is on hearsay there was drug company money in wanting this federal funding. Second of all, my understanding of patent law would say that if you come up with a procedure that would cure things like Alzheimer's or infant or the children's diabetes or things, that you could not patent that. However, if you could come up with a stem cell line and created some medication from that line, you could patent that. And think of the amount of value or how much it would be worth to a drug company to have medication that would mitigate Alzheimer's or diabetes and things. So there is certainly the potential for money in it, and it may be that some of those companies are looking for two things. One, for a lot of federal money to take some of the upfront cost of research out of it, and second of all, federal money to try to ethically cleanse what is the destruction of embryos or actually humans in an early state of development. And so there's several reasons there why I think that your writer may be onto something very important.
Finally, Congressman Aiken, a letter has already arrived on the desk of Senator Bill Frist, the majority leader, calling for a vote in the Senate on a similar bill to H.R. 810. What do you expect to happen in the Senate? Then, of course, you've already mentioned the president has promised a veto. What do you expect to happen with this?
Well, I would be hard-pressed to speculate what the Senate is liable to do. They're a somewhat unpredictable body, and so I'm not sure. There will certainly be pressure on Frist to move something forward. On the other hand, we have a lot of good legislation we've passed from the House, which is stalled over in the Senate, and so we're also encouraging some of the bills which are not going to be vetoed and could move us forward on some very important things. So I'm not sure how to speculate out what's going to happen there.
If I'm not mistaken, would this be President George W. Bush's first veto?
I think you're correct in that, yes.
What would it say to the American people if by perhaps even just accident of schedule, the very first bill that this president vetoes is the bill that comes out of H.R. 10 that would expand public money for embryonic stem cell research?
Well, I think it's an important bill for him to veto. It's a poor piece of legislation. It's an affront to a great number of people who believe that this is just ethically unacceptable. And particularly, most dangerously, it's a step down the slippery slope to starting to harvest body parts and look at human beings as objects for just experiment. And we see that going on. We've seen that going on in Germany. We see it going on in North Korea. Why in the world would we want to ever give up our respect for human life that has always been a pillar of our civilization?
Congressman Akin, you've been very generous with your time. Thank you for joining us here on Issues, Etc.
It's a pleasure to join you and your listeners. Thank you.
Congressman Todd Akin, he's of the 12th Congressional District in Missouri, a member of the House Science Committee and the Subcommittee on Research, and he's authored that commentary on stem cell research in yesterday's St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Now, the conversation on H.R. 810 is going to continue. In just a minute, we're going to be joined by Dr. Robert George, professor of jurisprudence at Princeton University and a member of the President's Council on Bioethics, to talk about yesterday's House vote to fund embryonic stem cell research. And we will be talking with him for the remainder of this hour on that subject. In the second hour of the program, the doctrine of the Trinity, Dr. Stephen Hine is a regular guest. He's joined us to talk about the theology of the cross, to talk about all sorts of subjects. He's going to take on a pretty big one there in the second hour, one that is, well, easy enough for a child to articulate, and yet would take the average Christian, any Christian, a lifetime to fully appreciate and understand the doctrine of the Trinity. He's director of the Concordia Institute for Christian Studies. That's the second hour of the program. In the third hour, two guests, Dr. Thomas Madden, will talk about the movie Kingdom of Heaven, and then we'll be talking in the last 25 minutes with our good friend, Pastor Joel Brandos. He is headmaster of Zion Lutheran Academy in Fort Wayne, Indiana, about making the transition from regular old educational system that seems to be failing to a classical model of education. That's all coming up here on Issues, Etc.
This bill would take us across a critical ethical line by creating new incentives for the ongoing destruction of emerging human life. Crossing this line would be a great mistake.
That was President George W. Bush, of course, expressing his desire to see 810 not pass, but also promising, even at its passage, to veto the bill. His reasoning, of course, was made clear there before a group of families. In the crowd there at the White House were these snowflake children that Congressman Akin told us about just a few minutes ago, children who had at one time been frozen embryos, the very kind of children that would perish if H.R. 810 becomes law. Dr. Robert George joins us here for the remainder of this hour. He's professor of jurisprudence at Princeton University and a member of the President's Council on Bioethics to talk about the House vote to fund embryonic stem cell research. Dr. George, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thanks very much, Todd. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Your reaction to the passage of H.R. 810?
Well, I was very glad that the bill did not pass with sufficient number of votes to override the president's veto. The president has promised that he'd veto the bill to prevent our crossing the ethical line into funding research involving embryo killing, and it's very clear that that veto will be sustained. So the president's policy will prevail.
I would like to hear your reaction to several statements that were made in the floor of the House during debate leading up to the vote yesterday on H.R. 810. The first one comes from Jim Rabsett. He is a Republican from Minnesota. This is what he had to say about the bill and about embryonic stem cell research.
To reduce this issue to an abortion issue is a horrible injustice to 100 million Americans suffering the ravages of diabetes, spinal cord paralysis, heart disease, Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease, cancer, MS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and other fatal debilitating diseases.
Two questions there. Jim Rabsett seems to say that we cannot equate this with abortion, and he has a long list of things that he thinks embryonic stem cell research would potentially cure. Your response to both of those contentions?
I'm afraid that the congressman is wrong on both counts. The evil of embryo killing is exactly the evil that's involved in abortion. We wouldn't worry about abortion except for the fact that it involves the taking of embryonic human life or life in the fetal stage of development. So I'm afraid that, contrary to what the congressman is there suggesting, embryonic stem cell research, at least as it's practiced involving embryo killing, has exactly the same ethical problem that abortion has. And then, of course, the second side of that, the second point on which he's wrong, is he is really elevating the hopes of suffering Americans and their families beyond any hope of being requited by virtue of leading people to believe that cures are around the corner or may ever come from embryonic stem cell research. Embryonic stem cell research is never going to cure Alzheimer's disease. If it's going to cure anything else, no one can see yet how and when that is going to happen. There are no embryonic stem cell therapies in clinical trials at the moment. The reason for that is that it's too dangerous to try to use them for therapeutic purposes. They tend toward tumor formation. They have other problems. While there are thousands of people who have benefited from non-embryonic stem cell therapies, therapies involving stem cells derived harmlessly from fat or bone marrow or umbilical cord blood and so forth, no Americans have been benefited therapeutically. No one in the world has been benefited therapeutically from embryonic stem cells. And while that may someday happen, we don't know for sure that it will happen, and we certainly don't know when it will happen, and it is by no means around the corner.
Even if it were to happen, even if somehow there were a breakthrough in the research, in embryonic stem cell research, and it became the panacea that people like Jim Rathstad seem to believe it is, even if that were true, would it still represent, as the president put it in our opening remarks there, a crossing of an ethical boundary, crossing of an ethical line that we dare not cross?
Well, of course it would. The president's absolutely right about that. It's not something that we look up in the Bible. It's rather something that we learn from any embryology textbook, that a human embryo is nothing other than a human being in the embryonic stage of its development. A human embryo is not something different from a human being, like a frog or a potato or a bean. Rather, what a human embryo is an embryonic human being, a human being in the embryonic stage of development. Just as you and I were at earlier stages of our development, adolescence, and before that, children, and before that, infants, we were also, before that, fetuses, and before that, embryos. Each of us was an embryo. We developed from the embryonic into and through the fetal, infant, child, and adolescent stages, and into adulthood with our determinateness, unity, and identity fully intact.
Why the push for federal money toward embryonic stem cell research, Dr. George?
Simple reason. The money's not available from private sources. And the reason the money's not available for private sources is that therapies and cures are not around the corner and may never come from this research. If they were around the corner, if people could see the possibility of making large amounts of money with therapies derived from embryo research, then private money would be there, the investments would be there, and there wouldn't be this need to rely on enormous government funding. But the reality is that all the promise seems to be, at least in the short to medium term, in adult stem cells or non-embryonic stem cell therapies, which means that if they're going to get money for the more fundamental science that needs to be done on embryonic stem cells, if it's to go forward, then it's going to have to come from the government.
Are our elected legislators, our lawmakers, do you believe, especially based in light of yesterday's vote, do you think they're fully informed on, number one, the distinction between embryonic stem cell research and adult stem cell research, and number two, on the real ethical crux of embryonic stem cell research?
They seem not to be. So many things were said in the debate, both on the floor and then in the run-up to the debate in the public media. So many things were said on all of these counts that were so far off base that one cannot help but conclude that many people who are making the decisions here simply aren't informed of what they're talking about. And that's really a shame, because the information is available. It's available out there. We live at a time when no one needs to be in ignorance about what's happening with adult stem cell research. No one needs to be misled by the hype over embryonic stem cell research. No one needs to be misled about the facts of embryology. You can look them up in any of the five or six major texts that are used in embryology work and courses at American medical schools. So there's no real need for the ignorance here. And that leads me to conclude that there's a degree of culpability.
Now, what are your hopes for the Senate? A letter's already been sent to Bill Frist asking him to get the Senate version of this bill underway for a vote. What do you think will happen there?
Well, I don't know whether they'll be able to keep it from going to a vote in the Senate. I'm just not sure of the politics of it. But even if it does, and if it does, it probably will pass again. But if it does, the president has promised to veto the bill, and it's very clear, because the number of votes in the House was sufficient to prevent the veto from being overridden, that the veto won't be overridden, which means that the president's policy will stay in place. Now, I should point out, Todd, that this does not mean that it will be impossible to produce stem cell lines of precisely the sort that embryonic stem cell scientists desire for the basic science they want to do. It doesn't mean that it will be impossible to create new lines that are qualified for federal funding, but it means that the lines will have to be created without embryo killing. The President's Council on Bioethics has put out a white paper just within the last 2 weeks, which outlines four possible methods, three of which I think are really quite promising, of obtaining pluripotent, that is, embryonic-type stem cell lines without embryo killing. Now, that's a win-win situation. It means that those who favor embryonic research can get what they want, embryonic stem cells or the equivalent of embryonic stem cells, and those who share my point of view that we shouldn't be killing embryos to get those stem cells can be content in conscience that this research can go forward on an ethically unimpeachable basis. Now, this isn't to suggest that those stem cells are going to be of therapeutic value anytime soon or ever, but they are usable in basic science. If we could obtain them in an ethically sound way, we should let the science go forward on them. And I think that a little attention to the alternatives here will enable us to come up with a solution to the current impasse.
Now, I don't know if I've ever heard this before, but could you, without going into too much detail and briefly, just describe the means by which pluripotent embryonic stem cells could be procured without the killing of human embryos?
Yeah, there are four possibilities, and let me quickly run through them. I'll begin with the one that I think is least promising, and that is trying to develop a method of extracting embryonic cells from a developing human embryo without killing or damaging the embryo. It's been proposed by Congressman Roscoe Bartlett, whom I believe is from Florida, and who has a human anatomy background, so he knows what he's talking about.
Okay.
But as I say, having looked at the science on this, I'm least optimistic about that one. But there are three others about which I'm quite optimistic. One of those would involve developing a technology. There are two Columbia Medical School professors who believe that that they have, in fact, developed the technology. It would have to be proven to distinguish truly living human embryos from organismically dead human embryos, embryos that are the equivalent of brain dead, although with embryos, of course, you don't yet have brain function, but the equivalent, that is, they no longer have an integrated organic functioning, but they still may, as a corpse may, have living tissues or cells, which can then be harvested and used to develop new stem cell lines. And since we would be working with embryos that weren't living, that were already dead, there would not be embryo killing involved. Even more promising are the third and fourth possibilities. The third is what's called altered nuclear transfer. This is a version of cloning, somatic cell nuclear transfer, but with a very, very ethically important dimension, which is an alteration of the somatic nucleus, the genetic makeup of the somatic nucleus, before it's transferred to an enucleated ovum, an ovum with the nucleus removed, so that what is produced when an electrical charge is given, as with cloning, is not an embryo, not a human embryo, or an embryo of any species that you're using cells from to do this, but rather is a non-embryonic entity, perhaps something equivalent to a gamete tumor, a disorganized growth, rather than an embryo, or even more promisingly, the use of the nuclear transfer technology to transform a somatic cell, a regular body cell, like a skin cell, to reprogram it back to its pluripotent stage, to make it a stem cell. So you're not harvesting the stem cell from an embryo or even from a non-embryonic entity, but rather by oocyte-assisted reprogramming, going directly from the somatic cell to a pluripotent stem cell. Now, that third possibility would involve necessarily, as cloning does, the use of ova, eggs, which would have to be obtained, and we would have to find a way to obtain them without exploiting women by subjecting them to superovulation, as people who favor cloning seem to be willing to do. So the fourth possibility would be to develop technologies that would enable us to engage in that reprogramming of somatic cells, what's called dedifferentiation of somatic cells, back to the pluripotent stage without using eggs, that is, using factors other than egg cytoplasm to affect the reprogramming of the somatic cell.
Finally, Dr. George, another soundbite from the House yesterday during the debate. Joe Barton, in this case, Republican of Texas, had this to say on why he was going to vote for H.R. 810. I want your reaction to this with only about a minute.
maybe the breakthrough is going to come in adult stem cells. I hope it does. I would love for it. But maybe, just maybe, it's going to come because of embryonic stem cells.
Your reaction to what the congressman had to say there?
If I heard him correctly, he's saying that the breakthrough is going to come from embryonic stem cells.
He says maybe it will, and that's why he's voting for H.R. 810.
Well, of course, that lays aside the ethical issue, which is the very issue that's in dispute here, of whether we want to proceed to cross this moral boundary to be taking human life in order to save human life, killing even the early embryo in the cause of healing. So I don't think he's addressed the objection that many, many, many serious people have to this process. But, of course, the second thing is he seems to have bought into the hype about embryonic stem cells. We know, as I say, that thousands of people have already been helped with non-embryonic stem cell therapies. We know that many such therapies are in advanced stages of clinical trials. By contrast, we know that nobody has been helped by any therapy, despite its being perfectly legal. No one has ever been helped by an embryonic stem cell therapy. You cannot use embryonic stem cells in therapies. They're too dangerous. And there are none even in clinical trials.
Bioethics.gov is the website for the President's Council on Bioethics, the website bioethics.gov. Dr. Robert George, thank you very much for giving us your time this afternoon and being our guest on Issues, Etc.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
Dr. Robert George is professor of jurisprudence at Princeton University and a member of the President's Council on Bioethics. That website address again, bioethics.gov. Coming up after this break, Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. Sunday was Trinity Sunday, celebrated by many churches. Some people say, well, the word Trinity isn't in the Bible. Some people say, look, it's difficult to understand God in any respect, and maybe the Trinity is just a metaphor that God's given us a convenient way of understanding Him on our level, but not really a statement about who God is. How do we rightly understand the Trinity? Is it a mystery beyond searching out? We'll answer some of those questions here in the next hour of Issues, Etc. with your questions and comments as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Then Dr. Thomas Madden joins us in hour three of the program. The movie's called The Kingdom of Heaven. It's about the Crusades. Yes, it's historical fiction, but how historical is it? We'll find out from Dr. Thomas Madden. He's written the book called A New Concise History of the Crusades. Then, in the last half hour of the program, Pastor Joel Brandos will be our guest. We'll be talking with him about the classical model of education, and in particular, how does one make the transition from education as it is to education as it was, the classical model of education. Stay tuned for all that. We'll be right back on Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.